You know what the funny thing is? Sometimes I feel like that guy. Everybody's got expectations, and everybody's got things that they want, and everybody expects that you've got all the answers. Everybody expects that somehow you know the right formula or the right system or the right buttons to push, and it's all going to be work. And I really do feel like that guy, because sometimes I feel like, and just running just like he did and slamming the door and hiding in an office because the world is looking. And the world is looking to the church for answers to problems, to real life problems. And honestly, don't you feel like sometimes they're just shoving things? How do you know you don't have the answers? Look, the church did this before. How do you know it's not? What changed? How come you can't? Didn't you write it down? I mean, don't you understand that we want your answers? And honestly, sometimes we feel like this guy. By the way, his name is Linguini, and he'll visit us just a little bit at the front of our sermons here just to kind of give us an idea of what it means to be a chef or a cook, because guess what? He's not one, at least not yet, but give us a little time. So we're going to start this new sermon series. We finished with our superheroes, and I packed all the T-shirts away, but don't worry, I can get to them again. Packed all the T-shirts away, and now we're going to start on this idea of the good church. And understand, before we can make something, before we can actually cook a recipe, we have to go do a little shopping. So we're going to spend the first few weeks shopping some ingredients. And as most of you know, I like to cook. And not meaning to be bragging, just so you know, I'm pretty good at it too. I mean, I do like to cook, and part of the reason that I'm good at it is because I've got a box at home that's full of recipes. And these are recipes that came from my mom and my granny and my grandma and other people from other churches that I've just collected over the years. And so I have recipes, and recipes are important to us when we begin to talk about cooking, because they help us remember what we did before. You know, but as you're making something and it actually works, if you begin to write it down and the measurements and the ingredients and things like that, then next time I want to make the same dish, I can pull the card back out and just follow the instructions. And so recipes are important because they help us remember what we did before, and they help us pass down what has worked before. You ever had somebody come up and you make a dish at the fellowship supper, and they come up and they say, "I want the recipe for that." Isn't it nice when you can just take out the card and you can just copy it, or you can just type it in an email and just send it out to them, and they've got their recipe? Because the idea that I've had it written down, I can give it to someone else. It isn't just something that's mine. They provide instructions for getting the approximate same results. I mean, that's what a recipe does. That's just an approximation, because you do understand that following a recipe, just because you follow the recipe, doesn't mean yours is going to turn out the same. Sandy, by the way, isn't that a cool name? Sandy, by the way, she lives on Sandy Lane. If you know Sandy at all, she usually is here. She's right back here. And she makes the world's best pecan pie. Oh, my gosh, it's delicious. I have asked her for that recipe, and I have followed that recipe, and I have cooked that pie at least 4 or 5 times, and mine still don't taste as good as hers. So now I need you to know that just because you follow a recipe doesn't necessarily mean you get the same results. In a recipe, there can be some variations. Maybe it's a different brand of an ingredient. Maybe it's a different style ingredient. Maybe you have to make some changes because of some dietary reasons. So there is some differences that go from recipe. And you need to also understand that as recipes are handed down, there is room for change. One of the signature recipes of my family is we make this phenomenal barbecue sauce. If you've ever had anything that came from my house as barbecued, trust me, it's a phenomenal barbecue sauce. Well, when I got the recipe from my mom, who got it from her mom, who I don't know where she got it from, when I got it, I wanted to use it for grilling, but it's a little too runny for grilling. So I'm like, okay, how can we fix this? And so I cut back a little bit on the sugar, and I added honey. So now my recipe is a little different from hers, but mine will work on a grill, but it won't. It doesn't, so it's not everyone. So you understand that there is room for change. Just because we're looking at a recipe doesn't mean that you always have to follow it just as it is. And I bring all of this up because I don't want us to get into this thing that, oh my gosh, we're doing this sermon series, so now we have this strict formula that's going to fix all of our problems. That's not what this is. This is a set of instructions. This is a recipe. But it's an important recipe because it is written from a gentleman that knows a lot about churches. We're going to be studying over the next 5 weeks the book of Titus. And if you don't know where the book of Titus is, well, if you have your copy of God's Word, hopefully you can turn to it and you can find it. But if you don't know where that is, or you don't have a Bible with you, you can feel free to grab the one right out of the pew rack in front of you, and you can turn to page 1181, and I promise you that you will be exactly where I'm going to be for the day. And it's only two pages, so you only have to flip the page once to keep up. So it's a very short book, and while you're turning there, let me tell you a little bit about the book. The book is written by the Apostle Paul. How do I know? Well, Titus 1:1 says, Paul, a servant of God and apostle of Jesus Christ. So Paul says, I'm writing this letter. Now, there's debate on whether or not Paul wrote it or whether he translated it or whether he dictated. It came from Paul because he identifies himself. We know who it was written to. How do I know who it was written to? Well, because it tells me in chapter 1, verse 4. It says, to Titus, my true son and companion in faith, my true son in our common faith. So this is written to Titus, a gentleman that has a job or a mission, and there's a purpose behind the book. And how do I know there's a purpose behind the book? Well, guess what? Titus chapter 1, verse 5 says, the reason I being Paul, left you, you being Titus, in Crete, was that you might put in order what was left unfinished. So Paul has started a church on the island of Crete. By the way, that is one of the Greek islands. It is the largest of the Greek islands. It is actually the fifth largest island in the Mediterranean Sea. If you like your little statistical trivia questions, there you go. There's your trivia for the day. And while Paul started the church, he's moved on. And when Paul moved on, he left Titus behind with the instructions, hey, you finish putting together what I started. How would you like to have them shoes to fill? I mean, you start and you're going to do this behind the Apostle Paul, who is, by all accounts, the greatest church planter that ever existed. So he's left Titus behind, and apparently some things aren't going well because he now feels compelled to write Titus and say, by the way, I think you misunderstood, so I am going to go ahead and tell you exactly what you're supposed to do. I'm going to write this out for you so you get it. And why that's why this letter is so important to us, because what we have in the book of Titus is we have from the very pen of the greatest church planter ever put on the planet the exact recipe that he uses to put together a church. Ooh. Man, wouldn't you like to have that? Wouldn't you like to have some of the best recipes out there? He's given it to us, and he doesn't make it very complicated. In fact, it only has five steps that you have to follow. Four ingredients, one action. So the first ingredient, well, I'm going to call it the flour. Now, flour is important when you begin to cook anything, especially if you're going to bake, because flour provides structure. Flour also holds all of the runny, messy ingredients together. You kind of put the flour there, and the flour begins to stretch, to absorb all the other things that are put into it. And depending on the ingredients that you put in, the number of ingredients you put in, how much you put into them, you'll either, if you mix flour in with something that's kind of wet, you'll get one of two things. You'll either get a really stretchy dough, a la cookies, or you'll get a batter that is used to make cake. But the thing is about flour, when it interacts with all these ingredients, it begins to absorb and either becomes a stretchy dough, or becomes a batter that thickens up. And the cool thing is that when it's heated and it's got all the other things, it will begin to harden. So it takes the things that you put in it and it causes them to gel together. Flour sounds pretty important, doesn't it? As a matter of fact, if I decide I'm going to make my recipe and I just decide, you know, who needs the flour? I mean, it's not even all that good for you. Who needs that? But I'll just leave that out with the other ingredients and you know what you're going to get, right? A big old fat runny mess that doesn't do good for anything. And so I guess the question that we have to begin to ask ourselves, in the church, what is the base ingredient that is supposed to structure and interact with the body in such a way that the church can stretch and thicken? What's the first ingredient that we need? Well, in order to build a good church, we have to have good leadership. It's important. You have to have it. It doesn't work. You can have all of the instruments that you want. You can have all the music you want. You can have the world's best teachers around. If we don't have good leadership, then you know what? It isn't going to work. And so in Titus chapter 1, verse 5 through 9, Paul agrees with this because guess where he starts with Titus? hey, Titus, you can't do this by yourself. You better find yourself a team of people. You better build yourself a bullpen. You better find yourself some leaders. And this is what Paul writes to Titus, verses 5 through 9. Hopefully you found page 1181 by now. The reason I left you in Crete was that you might put in order what was left unfinished and appoint elders in every town as I directed you. An elder must be blameless, faithful to his wife, a man whose children believe and are not open to the charge of being wild and disobedient. Since an overseer manages God's household, he must be blameless, not overbearing, not quick-tempered, not given to drunkenness, not violent, not pursuing dishonest gain. Rather, he must be hospitable, one who loves what is good, who is self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firmly to the trustworthy message as it has been taught, so that he can encourage others by sound doctrine to refute those who oppose it. That's a lot. Now, if you just wanted to sit down and put the brakes and the separators between all of that, we're talking about 16 qualifications for being an elder here. 16 of them. And I just want to let you know, this is called minister confession time. If you took those particular things and you laid them out on a piece of paper and you asked me to take a test on a good day, I might get a 12 out of 16. Now, that might sound good, but keep in mind, that's 75%, which makes me a strong C. And I told you that was on a good day, and I have bad days, so there might be some days when I don't meet as many as I think I meet. And so this idea that qualifications are important, and if this isn't hard enough, you know what? Paul wrote another letter to a gentleman named Timothy, and he kind of covers the same thing. In 1 Timothy chapter 1:3-7, he adds some additional context to this concept of elder. Listen to what he says. Here is a trustworthy saying. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. Now, the overseer is above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him. He must do so in a manner worthy of full respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must also have a good reputation with outsiders, so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap. And so I add all this, and I can kind of put these things together and marry them in there. So we've got all these qualifications, and if I only meet 12 out of 16, and I got a feeling if I ask the elders of this church to take the same test, I'm positive they wouldn't say they meet all of them. So how can we ever have elders if this is the qualification list? Well, this is why it's in quotes. See, I don't think it's something that we're supposed to be doing a checklist with. Either you do or you don't. I think it's something that is important. And it's important for us to understand what makes a good leader in the church. What is it when Paul wrote this letter to Titus and Paul wrote this letter to Timothy? Because let's be honest, if he just followed these qualifications, Titus would be doing this all by himself. Actually, no, he wouldn't, because Titus probably wouldn't make the list. So there would be nobody out there leading the church. And you all know the rule, right? Anything with no head is dead, and anything with two heads is a monster. Somebody's got to be the leader in the church. And so how do we go about doing this? And this really all comes down to one phrase. See, he's talking about character based on reputation. He's telling Titus to look at these people's lives and decide their character based on reputation. That word is used in both verses. Look at their life, look at what people think, and then decide whether or not they would be a good leader. Now, with that being said, there is one requirement. You have to have this requirement, or it doesn't matter how good they are, how much they look on the paper, no matter how many boxes they check, if you don't have this requirement, strike them off. Here's the requirement. They must desire it. At the book of the beginning of Timothy, it says they must, anybody that aspires to being an elder. Understand, this isn't something God wants warm bodies. He wants warm hearts. If they are not interested, if they don't desire being an elder, then it doesn't matter how many other qualifications they meet, then you know what? They should step themselves aside. Because let me tell you something, being an elder, being a leader in a church, it's hard work. It's a difficult job that requires some savvy, and it requires some ability to work with people, and it requires some time, and it requires that your life gets interrupted many times. And so if you're not on board, if you don't desire it, then this is not the job for you. This is not an advancement mode through the church where you're looking for the next title. If you decide, I'm going to be an elder, I want to be a leader in the church, then you understand I should have like went to Target and bought a shirt. Because you just painted a great big old Target right on the front of your shirt, and you are just there, and you're just going to be whacked from every single way that you can go. So if you're signing up for this job, you better be sure God has called you to do it. Because that's the one requirement. And after that, we can start putting all of those 16 requirements and those ones from Timothy, we can take them all and we can merge them into three buckets, looking at the reputation. And you know where he starts? Good place to start. A good reputation. The belief or opinions that are generally held about someone or something. Now that's important because it says it's a belief or an opinion. So we're not dealing with hard, fast facts at this point. We're looking at beliefs and opinions. And then you see the word generally there, and that's important because you know what? Not everybody is going to agree. You're going to have some leaders that, you know what? That everybody generally says, yeah, they meet the qualifications. You might have one person that says, I don't think so. Well, understand, we're going by general. So when we take the poll out there and we look at their lives, what is people's opinions or beliefs about that person? Would they make a good leader in the church? And so in the three buckets that we're looking at, he starts at a great place. He starts in the home. He wants to know, do they have a good reputation with his family? This is what it says in Titus. Faithful to his wife, a man whose children believe and are not open to charge of being wild or disobedient. Timothy, he echoes those statements. Faithful to his wife, he must manage his home. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him. He must do so in a manner worthy of full respect. So, the first place that we want to start is if anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of the church? I mean, if the family unit is a grease fire, if there's no respect for dad in the house, if there's no respect for the leader in the house, then how on earth can you ever expect that individual to step into the role in the church? You see, here's the deal. No family is perfect. You don't believe me? Let me invite you to my house for a couple of days. It won't take you long to figure out, man, we got some issues at my house sometimes. We do. You know why? Because we got four people that live in 1,800 square feet. And we got people that have this and that and the other they want to do. And sometimes what we want to do doesn't all coincide with each other. And we have problems sometimes. So I'm not talking about you're looking for somebody with a perfect family because it isn't going to exist. But you need to understand that what ultimately has to happen is there has to be this word respect. And it starts off with, how is his relationship with his wife? Now, you might ask yourself, does that mean that he has to be married? Nope. Marriage is not a requirement, but you do understand that the relationship with the wife is important because the fastest way to see if a man can live up to the commitment is he living up to the commitment? Isn't that the truth? I mean, think about it for just a second. It starts with the idea of, is he married? If he is married, is he faithful? Now, I want to tell you, this extends well beyond the bedroom. Usually we want to talk about, is he faithful? We want to talk about the idea of, is he involved in adultery or is he having an affair? And that's not really what this is talking about. I mean, the day that I stood up and I said, I do with my wife, there were a whole lot more commitments that I committed to other than just that. I mean, I believe it said in sickness and health and riches and poor and for better or for worse. And am I living up to the commitment? See, because if I'm not willing to live up to that commitment, then when the times get tough in the church, then guess what? I'm not going to live up to that commitment either. It's real easy to live up to the commitment when everything goes good. The question is when everything is going wrong, is he faithful? Is he there for his family? Because if he's not, then you know what? It says something about the man. It says something about the individual. It should raise some red flags. Here's the other question. How does he treat his wife? Now, this is important, and I just want to go ahead and tell you, this is really important to most of the ladies in the church, because guess what? How he treats his wife is how he's going to treat you. If he dismisses his wife and never wants to listen and always thinks he can do it this way or that way, if he's dismissive, then guess what? That's how he's going to treat everybody else in the church. He's going to dismiss your opinions also. And if he micromanages and he just always has to get involved in everything and he never has any trust in the relationship, then guess what? That'll translate too. You see, this idea of commitment goes a lot deeper. And so the idea is that, how's his relationship with the children in this house? Oh, now wait a minute. Now you're meddling here. I mean, we've stepped beyond just my marriage. Now you want to look at my kids? Yeah. You know, how are the kids in his house? Do they listen to him? Now, keep in mind, they're kids, and therefore they are people, and there are going to be moments in life when you can give them all the instructions that you want. You can tell them the stove is hot. They just have to see for themselves what the word hot means. So this does not mean that the child always 100% listens. But here's the big thing is, are they afraid of him or respect him? That's a big difference. There's a big difference in being afraid of a person and respecting that person's opinion. And so the Apostle Paul is saying, hey, look, take a look at the relationship between person and children. Because if that relationship ain't good, then you know what? Probably not going to end well in the other way either. And let's talk about how's the relationship with the kids outside the house. Oh, now I'm really getting picky here. I mean, it's one thing to look at the kids living inside of the house and saying, hey, look, you're in charge of the house. And so, you know what? The kids should have a certain expectation. But now we're dealing with kids outside the house. And here's the first thing I want to let you know. People change. You can raise a child in a house and you can teach them all the rules and you can teach them what it means to have a relationship with God. Maybe they'll even make a profession of faith sometime in their early years. And then when they get outside of the house, people change. So this does not mean that this is an indictment on how you raise your kids, but there is a very valid fact that, you know what? We should look at the relationship of the kids after they're grown. Because aren't we hoping that the leader that we're picking is going to help us grow our families in such a way that our families will adhere to the gospel? I mean, Paul is making this very clear to Titus that if you want to know what it is to have a good leader, then the first thing you better go look at is you better go look at their home. Let me tell you why the other reason that that's very important. Because if I look at the home, you understand that's the first crack in the armor, right? If the leader is dealing with chaos in the home, then eventually that chaos is going to find its way into the church. And it's going to find its way into the individuals and members of the body. So this idea that we're starting in the home isn't because Paul is setting some high standard. Well, he is setting a high standard. He's making sure you understand. Look at the home. See if the home is solid. If the home is solid, odds are you've got a good base for a leader. But he's got to have something else. He's got to have a good reputation with his community. Titus, he says, he must be blameless, not overbearing, not quick-tempered, not given to drunkenness, not violent, not pursuing dishonest gain, hospitable, one who loves what is good, who is self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. Timothy says, above reproach, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money, must have a good reputation with outsiders. And folks, this is a very big bucket because it includes the family, the household. It includes the extended family. It includes the neighbors. It includes the co-workers or business associates. It includes acquaintances and strangers. And it even includes enemies, people don't even like the person. Your community is a big place. And as a church, when you're beginning to look for this very valuable ingredient of leadership, the Apostle Paul pulls no punches. There are a lot of words on that page that they go about describing what it is we're supposed to be looking for when we're looking for a good leader in the community. But the funny thing is he gives us two great litmus tests that we can say, is this person going to be a good leader? Litmus test number one, what's the reputation with money? Now, this is important because money is important in the way that we handle things. How a leader handles his personal finances is how they will handle the church finances. Now, here's what I mean by that. You get somebody that doesn't mind cutting a corner or two to save a buck in their personal finances, you do understand that's going to translate into the church, right? You get somebody that is tight-fisted, or the word that Paul uses, greedy, somebody that hangs tight to the money, then you know what? They're going to put a stranglehold on the ministries, and everything is going to have to come down to the balance sheet. You know what? Is the church getting what we're putting into it financially? That's what's going to happen. You know what else is going to happen? You get somebody that doesn't understand the concept of living by a household budget, that church budget that we approve every single year, it's not going to mean anything. You see, this idea of money and how people look at their personal finances, and Paul tells the church, look under the hood, kick the tires. Check out how they value their money, because that is how it's going to translate directly into how they relate to people in the church. You see, the truth of the matter is, how a person spends their money tells you what's valuable to them. Jesus believed this. What did he say? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where somebody puts their money is where their mouth will go also, and while the rest of their body will follow right behind it. And eventually, that's the direction of the church. It's important. Not that it's the only thing that you're supposed to look at, because the next thing it says, are they approachable? Think about all the words he used. Hospitable. I can't even say that word right. Not quarrelsome. Not violent. Not drunk. Are they an approachable individual? And we can boil that into a couple of questions, and here's how I want you to answer that question. If you feel you have a problem, do you feel you can go talk to this person? Or do you not want to go talk to that person because you're going to be afraid that, well, you know what, the next night that's what's going to be the leader on the morning news. I mean, because you're going to tell them, and they're going to tell two friends, and they're going to tell two friends, and they're going to tell two friends. And eventually everybody around here knows everything that's going on, because that's not what we're supposed to be doing. Can you go talk to the person because, you know what, I don't think they're going to just immediately jump at me about anything. Are they an approachable individual? That's important, because if the sheep can't approach the shepherd, then the shepherd will never be able to meet the needs of the sheep. If they always have to be wondering, okay, got to approach it with caution, not a good thing, what's going to happen next time, then you understand. This is a big deal. Would they give you wise counsel? Oh. I want to let you know something. I have lots of people in my life that I ask their opinions of. I have maybe two people that I ask advice from. Really? Yeah. I have lots of people that I'll ask opinions of. What do you think? You know, let me hear the other side of the story. Maybe I'll hear something. I have only a few people that I will call and say, I got a problem. Can you give me advice? And then they start giving the advice. And you know what? Those are the people that usually where they start with is, well, this is what I think God would say. This is where I think the Bible intersects with your problem. These people, they're giving wise counsel, because they're not just giving me their opinions. They're not telling me what they think. They're telling me something that is useful, because I can then go back and examine God's word later and decide, you know what? They're right. Even if what they told me doesn't agree with what I said, it gives me the opportunity to have something other than somebody's opinion. And you know what? Our leaders in the church, they should be able to give wise counsel. I mean, I think I liked it better when we're just doing qualifications. I mean, I could score a solid 75, and I don't feel adequate to do this job at all now. Because I got to tell you, sometimes I can be a dismissive person. You catch me at the right moment when I got a lot of things going on in my life, man, I will go right on past it. Can I be quarrelsome? Absolutely. I can argue with the best of them. Yep, absolutely. I like to win arguments too, just so you know. Can I sometimes be a little inhospitable? possibly. You know, I'm not the person you get warm fuzzies from. You know, I was once called, I'm about as cuddly as a porcupine. So, you know, it just doesn't fit me sometimes. But you understand that if I'm going to lead a flock, if I'm going to be a leader in the church, then I have to figure out how to take my shortcomings and give those to God and deal with the people. Now, there is one more bucket that we got to think about. And maybe we should ask ourselves, you find it interesting that both lists, the list in Titus and the list in Timothy, put the God thing at the end. They talk about the family first, and then they talk about the community, and kind of almost at the end, after you make sure you got the God and the community thing, we kind of shove the God thing right at the end, say, hey, look, by the way, make sure they're also a solid Christian. I think the reason is because this is the easiest one to fake. I mean, I can memorize a few scriptures and maybe even learn a few songs by heart, and I can learn a couple of prayers, and you know what? I can make myself look godly. And Paul is telling Titus, don't go with the surface. Dig a little bit deeper. Take a look at their life, because many people look like solid Christians on the surface. I love the idea that he says, don't pick a new believer. Don't pick somebody that just got started in this, because understand, you're putting them at risk. You see, Paul is looking for something when he tells Titus to go find your leaders, to go find your bullpen, to go find the people that are going to lead the church, the people that are going to be the flower and connect all the other pieces together. Paul is looking for something. And a good leader must be a godly person. So here's some questions to put into your head. How's their prayer life? You know, the church's prayer life will never be more important than the leader's prayer life. If it's a secondary thought to the leader, it's going to be a bypassing thought to the church. When we are looking at who is the leaders of the church, this should be the first thing we ask. How is your prayer life? Do you study the Bible? I mean, I don't ask, do you read it? I mean, do you look inside of it and look for guidance from it? Do you actually look into the Bible for the answers in your life? Or are you just kind of out there making it up as you go? Do you actually study the Bible? That's an important idea. Here's one. Do you trust the Bible? You know, it's one thing to study the Bible and be able to answer the Jeopardy questions. By the way, I am really good when we watch Jeopardy on television and they do the Bible category. I just want to let you know, if they would just make Jeopardy all Bible, I would go volunteer because I can answer those questions. I should be able to. I've been in church most of my life. And you know what? We're not interested in the Jeopardy questions. Do you trust what you study enough to take it into your life and actually put it into practice so people can watch it? That sounds a lot harder, doesn't it? I mean, it's a lot cooler if all I got to do is memorize a few facts and figures to pass a test. That's not the test. The test is do you trust it? And then the bigger thing, can they apply the Bible? A lot of times we get into what I call coach speak. You know what it sounds like, right? There are little phrases that we say, well, Jesus is the reason for the season. Well, I'm just taking it one day at a time. Well, you know, I'll pray about it. We get into that kind of a mode. Here's my question. When you approach your leaders with the problem, are they able to say, hey, look, this is where your problem intersects with God's Word? Are they able to take God's Word and apply it into your life? Because remember, the idea behind flour is it connects to every other ingredient to bring all the other ingredients into one big piece. No flour, runny mess. See, the truth is, only good leaders inspire good followers. I have sort of a problem with this statement, but since it's not my original statement, I guess I'll just have to be okay with it, because I had a youth minister one time when he was putting together the youth workers and everything like this, and then he told us, you know what? If we have a following issue in our youth ministry, it's not a follower issue. It's a leader issue. If you can't get kids to follow you, then please go find yourself another ministry. If kids aren't willing to follow you, then you know what? This isn't your job. You see, because anytime you have a following issue, you understand sheep follow the shepherd. Why? Well, because they trust the shepherd, and the shepherd looks after them, and so that's where they follow. And I have a problem sometimes with that, because there are just some people that don't want to follow, and that's, I want to say it's their problem. Maybe. Or maybe I need to be the leader that constantly evaluates myself and say, are they not following because of something I'm doing wrong? Am I putting a stumbling block in their way? Am I making this too hard? Am I being too difficult? Am I being too complicated? Am I not seeing the big picture? You see, that's what makes a great leader, is the fact they are constantly evaluating their life. They're not perfect, but they're willing to make it better. I'm going to close this morning by a story that I know I've shared here before. It's one of my favorite stories from, actually it happened here. We have a puppet team that goes here on Sunday nights, and I try now to give the kids more responsibility. We've been doing this for a number of years, so I'm taking a pullback moment, and we have a young lady that's part of this, and she's one of the younger members, and on purpose, one night at practice, I assigned her to the middle of the stage, and I told everybody, follow her. And so we started practice, and the first thing you know, she stood up and peeked over top of the thing. Barry, they're not following me. You know what I told her? If they're not following, you're not leading. If you want me to come back there and fix it and make them listen to you, I can do that. But you understand, that's not the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise was for her to get them to follow. So we stopped practicing. I tell you what, I'll give you a few minutes, and we'll give you a few minutes to pull it all together, and then we'll start the music back. And when me and Diane, we just sat there, you can behind the stage as the bickering was starting. And finally they said, we're ready. And you know what? And the next time, they were together. Because she took control of the situation. She became the leader. You know, this is important for us to remember. Because if we are missing any one of these ingredients we're going to talk about over the next few weeks, this won't work. And you know what? Just so you know, the elders got an advanced copy of this sermon. I am not blindsiding everybody. I sent this out in an email attached to them because I wanted them to look at it to make sure they understand this is how I think Scripture intersects with leadership in the church. And you know what? Didn't hear a word back telling me, you know, I don't think we should do this. Because we do have people here that believe in good leadership.